Next up is Matteo Ward, who describes a very real lived experience in relationship to the fashion industry and how he's choosing to deal with it.
Welcome. Yet another day of our podcast, Unsaid. The beautiful things that we should talk about, even that they hurt. We're at Milan Design Week. We sketched the weather the last weeks of the last days. And again, the sun is shining, but luckily with a little less wind. Very happy that we have Matteo, that you're here. Thank you very much. In an alternative setup, because we know you have to run. So it is a bit of a short introduction and a teaser to all the beauty that you are bringing here in Italy. And but I didn't want our audience not to get to know you. I will do a short introduction and hand the mic over because I don't want to talk. I want to let you talk as much as possible. But I wrote it down because as I'm dyslexic and my memory is not always great. But Matteo Ward, Vicenza. When we spoke the first time, like the place where you're from has a very important part in of course, the rest of your life. And I think that is, in general, where you grow up is important, but especially growing up there and close by one of the big factories that produced the Gore-Tex materials. And for the ones that don't know it, the Gore-Tex materials contain a polymer, PFAS. And as you said, the forever chemicals, the chemicals that never go away, and that signed or scratched or started your way of like, okay, what happens? Because now there is a an ongoing big lawsuit on everything that went wrong. And that was a sort of the starting point of, at least if I see it and hear it, it gave you the energy to start. And yes, we want to hear what you're doing, but most of all, we also want to talk about what we normally don't talk about on Design Weeks. The edges where what we mostly want to hide. And I think on those edges is exactly the playing field where you play. It's the questions that you're asking. And to start first, maybe you can do a small introduction about yourself. I know you did a very nice documentary called Junk. Maybe the reason why you made it, and then we'll bounce from there.
Absolutely. Thank you, guys. Thanks for the invitation. As you said, the reason I started trying to really challenge the way clothing is made, but in general, the role of the design industry, was because, A, I come from a family that works in fashion and design, and I've never wanted to work in this field. I actually wanted to be a politician when I grew up. But I found myself just being, you know, sucked into it. And it's almost like a glass palace. Like, you walk into the space and you don't know how to exit. And in a way, you continue to search for an image of yourself that's self-fulfilling, but that self-fulfillment comes from things that are induced. So I got sucked into this cycle from the age of 21 and 28 until I found out that the city where I'm from, which is Vicenza in Italy, I'm half Italian, half American. My dad is from Seattle. Was going through one of the biggest environmental disasters in history. And that coincided more or less with the collapse of Rana Plaza in Bangladesh. So I was, you know, I had a lot of external factors just signaling to me, hey, Matteo, what you're doing is disaligned with who you wanted to be in life, because you're pretty much part of a system that is creating stuff that nobody needs in this quantity and nobody needs in this low quality, just to what? Have a salary, go home and get a high five because you've reached X amount of business, you know, targets. And the biggest environmental disaster I was referring to, as you said, is the water pollution from a chemical substance that's called a forever chemical. It's a family of substances called PFAS. And they were produced by a company that used to sell them to Gore-Tex as well, but not only, to make pretty much every surface hydro-repellent, from textiles to pans to makeups. They started producing these in the late 60s. And in Bona or Malafide, this is what the lawsuit is going on right now, they continue to dump the waste of these forever chemicals in our water streams. The result, right now, where I'm from, we have 350,000 people, I'm one of them, that's completely contaminated by PFAS. We have it in our blood, it's biopersistent, you can't get rid of it, and there's no way to cure it. And the consequences on your health were just, you know, we're talking about probable links. Doctors are talking about probable links between PFAS exposure and testicular cancer, kidney cancer, cardiovascular diseases. I could go on forever, but not to sound too gloomy, but, you know, I had two major things happening around the world. One in Bangladesh, the collapse of Rana Plaza, social injustice. One in my own backyard. The water I've been drinking for in my entire life is completely contaminated. One culprit, the fashion industry. I was like, I need to challenge this. So I quit my job. I was working for Abercrombie Fitch, actually, back then. I worked for them for the first, in my 20s. And I co-founded Rod as a design studio that was primarily, initially, just focused on education as a nonprofit. I felt I needed to give back what I was discovering about the industry to students. So we started in high schools in Italy and then all over the world. Then we created our own innovative startup, patenting a technology that uses recycled graphite, the ones you find in pencils, as a dye stuff, which is non-toxic, non-harmful. It was a good alternative to a lot of the chemical that were produced instead in my own hometown. And then because I went broke, because it was 2016 and nobody gave a shit about what I was doing, and I was desperately trying to license the technology or find a way to make a living off of this, I created my own design studio where I was like, if people don't listen to us, they will listen to projects, which put me at the edge, as you said before, because the design studio started doing well in 2017, but primarily 2018, 2019. And then I found myself, this imposter syndrome where I was like, my financial stability again comes from producing clothes that, even if they reduce the environmental impact because of a technology, because of a material, even if they're made in fantastic supply chains, at the end of the day, I know that nobody fucking needs. There's 150 billion garments of clothing being produced in each and every single year. So how do I challenge that model? Because overconsumption and overproduction are the biggest challenges we have to face. And the pandemic helped because at that point, everything stopped, so orders stopped, and that gave me the confidence to say, hey, it's time to revisit the business model. And that's when we opened our own services and think tank to reduce the amount of profit revenues actually that were coming from products, increase the amount of revenues that were coming from services, from educational services, from innovation and supply chain services, from helping other brands scale and speed up the process of evolution. And this gave me also the time to focus more on what I still believe are the three main things that are needed to challenge the industry here. One, politics. I started working with the European Commission, with the local parliament in Italy, to catalyze the rise of a legislative framework that can catalyze the rise of better businesses. Two, social justice. Three, the role of design. I think this is what we're here talking about. Nobody needs another t-shirt, but everybody will still wear t-shirts. Everybody will still wear jeans. We still need textiles. We live in textiles, and textiles have defined the world we live in. So I asked myself, if the Industrial Revolution was pretty much a fashion revolution, why can't we have a fashion revolution today that redefines the world again? Through the design of a dress, we can impact habits and habitats. And that's power. I think it's like we are the only industry that can do both things. But we need to understand it, visualize it, understand then how can we redefine the role of a dress in a way that it makes it reasonable for us to explain ourselves why we're still extracting resources that are needed for life to create textiles that nobody needs. One way is obviously reusing and continue to use what's already there. Another way is to redefine probably the role of your shirt, of my polo shirt, of your jacket. What can your jacket do that it hasn't done so far? I think the answer will come from observing what's happening out there and say, hey, we have UV rays now that are more intense. Are we designing textiles to protect ourselves from that? MIT Media Lab in Boston, Neri Oxman, she's done incredible work in understanding how to create a new generation of materials that work like the skin even, or nature. So that's where we are working and operating today.
I think your story is so powerful because it's very personal, and what's most personal is most universal. And I think to have come through basically abuse, recognize the perpetrator and address it as you are is very brave and necessary. I wanted to ask the question, if we were to invite in the fashion industry to be here with us, what would you say to the fashion industry if you could speak directly to it as if it was a person?
Just start paying people living wages. I think that's the number one step that we have to take, redistribution of wealth along the supply chain, if we want to make the ecological transition happen. It's impossible to do otherwise. I was in Bangladesh a couple of months ago. I was walking down this path. On the right, left-hand side, I had factories, textile factories. And they were telling me that these are the most certified, blah, 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 green filters, solar energy, everything. I was like, great. But on the right-hand side, I had rice fields that were completely covered in textile waste, had a layer of dark black water with, in the surface, dyes that were literally coming out of tubes directly from the textile factories, and people having to grow their own crops, their own vegetables in that shit. So obviously, I was like being provocative because I wanted to get to the bottom of this. I was like, hey, but you're telling me these factories are certified and this is the environment they're in. Don't they have filters? It's like, oh, yes, of course we have filters, but we don't have the money to turn them on because you guys want to pay $1, $2, $3 for ready-to-wear garments. If we're not putting this economic, if we don't put people in the economic and psychological condition to think about anything else other than survival, ecological disasters are inevitable. Right now, I feel like we're starting from the trying to solve the ecological problem, which is not bad. Like, I don't think it's bad that we think about how to reduce energy consumption, how to reduce the water footprint. That's awesome. But all of this, if it doesn't, you know, work in pair with how do we solve social injustice? How do we redefine the oppressive structure that was designed by political design when the fashion industry was invented at the end of the 18th century? Did you know that in 1792, an American politician and the British politicians actually designed and written down in paper, like in black and white in papers, that in paper, that the only way to make their countries great and thrive on textile industry was to exploit things such as women, children, and water. This was in 1792. Nothing has changed since then, just the scale and impact of how this has evolved. But
yeah, well, and the closed doors, like it was written on paper, shown, and now it's been hidden. But it's interesting what you say. Like I lose from that. It's very inspiring. It's you're introducing or inviting the industry to do different. And the main point that you're coming to is actually the financial system where we all living in, the way how money is distributed. Do you have the idea that while trying to give solutions in the supply chain to start, that you actually have to fight more about how brands talk about what they do, so their marketing, and actually challenge the financial system instead of that you're challenging maybe the supply chain due to that they have no ability to change?
Yeah, I'm with you. So I think communication strategies are fundamental for behavioral changes. Right now, the way brands communicate is in contradiction with any sustainability strategy they have on their website, ESG strategy, call it as you want. Because on the one hand, you're saying, I pledge to reduce my environmental footprint by 30% by 2030. Typical statement. And on the other hand, you have communication strategies that are like, buy more, consume more. And we need to grow. Well, not needless to say more, right? This is a conflict. This is a contradiction. This is friction tension that I like to dig in our research as well. With respect to the supply chain, financial systems, the bargaining power of suppliers, unfortunately, is really low today. The brands have the most of it, specifically in countries like Bangladesh, where 80% of the exports come from textiles. There's really no incentive, unfortunately, unless in my opinion, legislative framework comes in on the brand side to do anything that changes this, alters this, because even the KPIs that, you know, we adopt to measure the performance of the brands or the managers in the same systems are in conflict with the idea, the notions that wealth should be redistributed. Quite the opposite. You want to grow and make more profits. Legislators have to step in here. And if I may say something else, we are at Milan Design Week, you said it earlier. Something that nobody's saying, but to me it's like so obvious. If you go around what's going around here, everybody's celebrating the icons of design, like the icons that were designed 70, 80, 60, 50, 4 years ago. I love that. I love those icons as well. Why are we celebrating what we're doing today? Is who is designing something today that has the ability to really redefine the world we're living in, or to be called and really be held up to the standard of being real design, therefore a project rather than a product, a project that is the result of the designer's need to find a balance between technology, aesthetic and form, and function. Function, that's what's lacking in the textile industry. We're not designing functional clothes. We're not. In the past, we did. We designed functional objects. We designed a lot of functional stuff. There are very few operators today that reflect on, okay, what are the world challenges today? What is the function that it's needed out of my project and my product? We are sitting on something that's really functional, actually.
No, I think you have a point. But it's, if you're thinking about functionality, a lot of times it is how do we, especially what we wear, how do we protect ourselves from our surroundings? How do we protect ourselves from the weather? And that is, I think in a lot of cases, is we try to create things that are stopping the environmental things that come towards us. Rain, wind. And the harder you want to stop environmental things that come towards you, the more chemicals almost, the further you go away from actually what nature is. And that dialogue is a bit the reality. And I know that you're like in that, but that is also what immediately a lot of the brand says, like, yeah, well, if I do more responsible, then actually the functional quality is worse. But I want to sell a better product. How do you look at that?
I'll answer. I cannot name names, make names, but I had this conversation with a design studio recently of a very famous sportswear company, and they were telling me, we're all about functionality, not really sustainability. I'm like, oh, great. So the habitat in which your very functional consumers, as you call them, doesn't really come into the equation of performance and functionality. It's really a redefinition of what functionality is in the 21st century, a redefinition of what performance is. Environmental performance, social performance is as important, if not more, than anything else. And if you have something that requires high functionality because you have to perform in some sort of environment, which is extreme, and there's a lack of a technology or a material or a process in the market that enables you to achieve that performance and at the same time mitigate, if not ameliorate, the impact on the environment and respect people, that's an opportunity for innovation. That's where R&D should go.
I think there's one, because I do believe if you want to save lives, you can innovate. And doing one product is not breaking the world. It is scaling something that is functional for being on the mountain. But I see everybody here in Milan, in the city, wearing it. And there suddenly becomes a contradiction. Yeah. We made it for one purpose, but it's used for something totally else. And coming back to actually, you were saying in the beginning, sort of all the things that we make that we don't need. And you mentioned a few times the word consumer. All things that are totally related to the moment of sale. Yeah. I have the idea that the fashion industry, and I would like to hear your view on that, is not at all designing for usage, not at all designing for people having a dialogue with the product, a product breaking, a product going to another owner, a product going to another owner and another, and then maybe breaking and coming back. How do you see that we are still discussing and talking about consumers and the moment of sale instead of like that we talk about usage?
Okay, before you answer that, we have just had this signal done, which means we've got a few minutes left, but I just actually wanted to take a moment to thank you. I haven't met you before. I know you guys know each other. But you've reminded me when you said you wanted to be a politician. Like when I was younger, the first time I actually witnessed that green room in the UK where those angry, overweight, white, middle-aged men were shouting at each other. And I was like, this is how we fucking run our country. Are you serious? And I spent many years just avoiding it. I was like, fuck that. I'm not going to have anything to do with that. But I suppose the realization that environmental catastrophe that you've spoken about today is actually a failing of a much bigger kind, which is governance. Climate change isn't ultimately our problem. It is a big problem, but it's governance we need to get on top of. And to sit here with you and spend time and feel your energy today, you know, for so many years I was wondering why our politicians don't seem to have wisdom, why they're not inspiring. But you are. You do have wisdom and you are hugely inspiring. So I just wanted to thank you. You're the first person I've ever met that said, I wanted to be a politician. I always wondered who would say that and think that. But I'm very inspired by you. So I just wanted to thank you for being here today. And in closing that question, you know, please do answer and then...
Thanks, David. I feel like I appreciate that. In a way, we're all doing politics through design, right? Design is a political act. And this answers also your question, why are we designing for usage? We're designing for consumption because probably the fashion industry, as much as it likes to believe that it's fashion design, it's not fashion design. It's, and I will quote Tobias Scarpa, an Afra Tobias Scarpa. They, in the 70s, they wrote this little booklet. It was like a catalog. By the end of, and with all of their products, right? Which one may, you know, you may believe that it's a catalog made for consumption of furniture. In reality, at the end of the catalog, they wrote a three-pager called Design, Redesign, and Styling. And Afra and Tobias Scarpa were like, we're designer when we design projects that are the perfect combination between, again, form, technology, and that function. The moment we lose sight of the function evolves through time. Right now, today, functions require us to think about different now, something different. We require, you know, we can make fantastic waterproof membranes and jackets. We may have not the perfect technology to do it in a way that's not harmful to the planet, but does that entitle us to use and apply that fabric for shoes, for garments that are everybody wearing in the streets in the city, as you've noticed here in Milan? That's one of the questions we ask ourselves in Junk in the docuseries, for example. The problem is that it is a foundational structural imperative for the fashion industry we have designed not to think about usage, but to think about consumption only. 1678... King Louis XIV, he wanted to become the richest and most powerful man in the world. His CFO, Jean-Baptiste Colbert, the Minister of Finance, told him, let's focus on textiles. We create great textiles. Everybody in Spain is boring and they're super wealthy because they've discovered the new world. But believe me, if we create great textiles and if we raise barriers and block textiles from Italy and Germany from coming into our country, we're going to become fantastically influential in Europe and the world. And King Louis XIV said, okay, but who are we going to sell them to? Fixed. He decided that by law, we had to have two seasons, spring, summer, and fall, winter. And people were forced to change clothing every other season. If not, they will be judged and considered nothing. Bugs. 1678, an extraordinary edition of what was then considered Instagram, the Mercure Galant, a fashion magazine, came out and showed the world that at the court of Versailles, nobles and aristocrats were changing clothes every two seasons. That was the start of it. And actually, it is claimed that Colbert said that fashion was to France what gold mines in Peru were to Spain. It's a political decision that led us here. With politics, we can change it, I believe.
Thank you, Matteo. I found your words hugely inspiring and gives me great hope, not just about the fashion industry, but actually the future of politics as well. Next up, we have Yves Bihar. Eva's been notorious in the design world for a very long time, so much so that Boré actually studied him while he was at college. He's also been visiting Milan Design Week for many years, since the early noughties. And so he tells us how the Design Week is changing and what he sees for the future.